Welcome to another episode of the Criminal Law Department Presents podcast, a production of the Criminal Law Department at the Judge Advocate General's Legal Center and School in Charlottesville, Virginia. Every 2 weeks, we release a new episode. Today, we're going to have a conversation about a recent opinion from the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces. Please note that these episodes may contain facts and circumstances surrounding criminal trials. Listener discretion is advised.
Rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable United States Court of Appeals of the Armed Forces is now open and in session. God save the United States of America and this honorable court.
Welcome back to Criminal Law Presents CAF Chats. I am Major Rhianne Wentz, and I am joined by the mostly esteemed
Major Dustin Morgan.
We are back, and we are here to talk about United States versus Strong, which is a really interesting case that I think has implications beyond, you know, sort of the four corners of the decision. Before I get ahead of myself, this is a case about the gravamen of the offense was negligent homicide. So this was out of Fort Stewart. There was a group of West Point cadets that were going to a land navigation site for training. And the appellant in the case, Strong, was driving one of the vehicles. And the vehicle flipped over and it killed one cadet and injured others in the vehicle. CID responded to the scene, and one witness said that they saw the appellant, Strong, using her Apple Watch near when the rollover occurred. And so CID obtained a search authorization for both Strong's phone and for her Apple Watch. They went to her living quarters, and while she was getting dressed, like getting ready to turn this stuff over, there was an NCO that was in there supervising her. The CID agent wasn't in the room all the time. But while she was in there getting ready to turn this stuff over, the NCO basically said several times that she wasn't allowed to use her phone. The CID agent eventually came in and saw that she was trying to use her phone. And the Strong became belligerent, tried to take her watch and her phone back several times, and the CID agent had to admonish Strong more than once. So as part of their training, when CID agents seize digital evidence, so cell phones, watches, that kind of thing, they're trained to put them in what's called a Faraday bag. A Faraday bag essentially prevents electronic signals from going in or out of the bag. Now, in this case, the CID agent did place the digital evidence in what was at least labeled a Faraday bag, but ultimately was not successful as a Faraday bag. And what I mean by that is either the bag was defective, it was mislabeled, it was left open, there was some issue that allowed signals in and out. Normally, if a Faraday bag works, then the signals are not allowed in and out. And then when CID returns to the office with whatever the digital material is, then the CID agents there, the forensic examiners, can make a forensically sound copy of the data that's on the phone. Anyway, in this case, they were unsuccessful in using this Faraday bag, and ultimately the data eventually was erased before a forensically sound copy could be made. And so there was a lot of timestamps in the opinion, but ultimately what matters for this opinion is that the evidence, the digital material on both the phone and the watch were erased before CID could make a copy of it. And what CID eventually found through a Stored Communications Act warrant, 2703 warrant, was that the accused had used her laptop to search for things like find my iPhone, erase iPhone remotely, and had ultimately been successful in doing that. She had signed into her iCloud and had wiped both the phone and the watch. And so ultimately, the question in this case was not, it's not a Fourth Amendment question, it's not a search and seizure question, it's actually a legal and factual sufficiency question for Article 131 ECHO. And essentially, it's whether CID was endeavoring to seize the digital content of appellant's iPhone when she erased it. And CAF actually ended up concluding that the seizure of the digital content was not complete when CID seized the iPhone and placed it in the Faraday-labeled bag, and that CID was still endeavoring to seize the digital content when the appellant erased it. And I promise, Major Morgan, I will let you talk here in just a second. But first, I want to talk about the charging structure in this case, because I think, You know, when I was a captain, I used to make fun of those field grade officers who would say, hey, I think that that's in 134, or would give me some piece of advice that was based on their practicing 5, 6, 10 years ago. I used to make fun of those field grades. And today I became one, one of those field grades now. Because what I said was, I think obstructing justice is in 134. No, it was prior to the MJA 2016 Act. And so I went down a bit of a rabbit hole in figuring out, one, where obstructing justice was, and then also what prompted the move. And so 134 used to house obstructing justice. It used to be an enumerated offense under Article 134. And so then I went to the massively long Military Justice Review Group recommendations report and looked at basically what their rationale was in recommending a change in moving obstructing justice from 134 to this sort of new scheme under 131. And it's 131 basically Bravo through Foxtrot.
Yep.
Yeah. And so there is an obstructing justice, and we can talk about that. And there is now this 131 Echo, which is prevention of authorized seizure of property. And essentially the rationale for the Military Justice Review Group was to remove that terminal element, because there was really no need for that terminal element. Obstructing justice, the prevention of the authorized seizure of property, both of those exist in the civilian criminal context. And so there's no real need to have that terminal element in 134 in order for it to be a military offense. But still unclear as to why there are a bunch of different offenses, a bunch of different offenses, as opposed to like one obstructing justice. But you're going to enlighten us on that. So having shared that rabbit hole with literally everybody else, let's talk about how CAF analyzed this case.
Yeah. So like always, when they're looking at a statutory construction case, they're just looking at the plain language of it. So Judge Johnson wrote for the majority here. And she starts off by saying, when the words are plain, they're just plain. So it's really an examination of what endeavoring to seize here. In the digital context, we're always talking differently, right? Because I think that we all just basically understand just having the phone does not give you access to the data. And here, like, that proved to be the case because it was a defective Faraday bag, like they were not able to successfully manipulate and copy the data. And by the way, when I always think about this case in my head, I just like imagine a Ziploc bag with Faraday written in crayon in it. Like maybe that's what happened here.
I think that's the case.
Yeah, unclear. But so they take a look at that. And it really comes down to is, when's the seizure complete here? Because if the seizure is complete, there's no more seizing. There's no more endeavoring to seize. It just has been seized at that point. And they go through a line of cases that are kind of Fourth Amendment cases. And ultimately, they conclude, when you're unable to exercise dominion or control over your property, that is the point where it has been seized. And here, ultimately, because she was still able to manipulate the data, because she was still able to go onto the Find My iPhone app and able to remove it and delete her phone, attempt to delete her Apple Watch during the course of the endeavoring to seize, the seizure had not been completed, and she was able to commit the crime of 131 Echo.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point. You know, they do use a lot of Fourth Amendment cases, and there's been a lot of language from CAF and from other cases about the struggle that courts have in applying Fourth Amendment concepts, which are inherently designed for physical spaces, yep, to data, right? So the CAF calls the data ethereal, which is absolutely accurate. And also, there's different kinds of data, and our ability to access it is a little bit different. But to your point, I think also this case potentially has some impact on Fourth Amendment analysis.
Yeah, if you take them for what they're saying it's worth, I mean, this has much broader implications beyond just what endeavoring to seize mean. It has broader implications for what seizure is, like in a much broader sense.
Yes. So I guess my question for you, based upon the knowledge that I gained today, is there any... So for the practitioners, is there any value in charging this statute as opposed to just obstructing justice? Could they have charged either one? Do you think there's any benefit in charging one over the other?
So I think that 131 Bravo, the obstruction of justice, would have been simpler here. You would have removed some of this nuance and whether or not there was an endeavor to seize or whether they were still in the process of seizing the data. I think that what 131 Bravo, the obstruction of justice, requires is that there's knowledge of an investigation and that you're in some way impeding that investigation. I think that when CID knocks on your door at 11:30 at night, they're taking your cell phone, they're taking your watch, you knew what happened earlier in the day where you were involved in a rollover where a soldier unfortunately perished. There's very little question that can be like made in my mind that she knew that an investigation was occurring. I do think 131 Bravo would have been simpler here, but that's why there's these distinct areas of, they're all obstruction-based crimes. I know 131 Bravo is obstruction, but Bravo, Charlie, Delta, Echo, and Fox are really all obstruction-based crimes when you look at it. Like one of them is witness tampering, basically, like trying to prevent a witness from testifying in a certain manner or changing the way they will testify. We would have charged that up as obstruction prior to MJ 2016 and its implementation in 1 January 2019. I don't know, unless you have a real specific way that you want to argue it, or there's a worry that the accused did not know that an investigation was ongoing, if there's much value in charging them in a different manner. I think you're buying a more complicated and nuanced case by doing so. I mean, obviously, Congress had a reason for enacting those laws, but there's no preemption concerns within these, like these articles of the UCMJ. Like a preemption is a purely 134 concern. So if the UCMJ punishes it and criminalizes it in a specific manner, I don't know why you overcomplicate the simple here. And a case that would have been relatively simple, I think, if had you charged obstruction, like we went through not one, but two ACCA opinions and a CAF opinion, and it took over 2 years in the appellate world to settle this. I mean, it's good to have case law on it, but I don't know if there's a lot of value in charging it in a specific manner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the fact that it is data complicates it.
Agreed.
And so if this had been some sort of physical,
yep.
I don't know, a diary, just any kind of physical, you know, aspect of it, maybe Fifth Amendment issues there, but like, I think it would have been, we would not have had sort of the issues here. And so, yeah.
Like, I think if you had destroyed it even, like I think a simpler case is if you think that they're going to, like the commander orders a soldier to come in and turn their phone over. Mm-hmm. And as the soldier's coming into the office, they throw their phone off a bridge.
Yeah.
Like for it to ever, forever.
It's a much better example than what I came up with.
I think that that's much simpler in this context. And I think there that does, like your charging decision can paint a story sometimes. And I think if you charge it in that way and you want to tell that specific story to the fact finder, I mean, I think that's okay. But I think in these like overly complicated areas, like especially mm-hmm. where it involves data, like it, don't charge things to create case law for that specific purpose because you're gambling with your conviction. I think I've said this before, but don't rent something when you can buy it.
Well, and so here's the question. If the Faraday bag had worked...
It's done.
Because what the court says is 131 Echo criminalizes action taken with the intent to prevent authorized seizure of property. The unlawful action must occur before the seizure is complete. And essentially, the seizure is complete, according to CAF, when the person who has the possessory interest in it can no longer exercise control over it. And so if that's the case and the Faraday bag works properly, then this isn't an issue.
Right, because if it had been placed in airplane mode properly, the Faraday bag works, even if she would have gotten onto her computer, gone on to find my iPhone, tried to delete it, it just would have had no effect.
Well, and I'm interested to know, I don't know this, and this will kind of factor into one of my recommendations for the field, but even if you put it in airplane mode, you still have access to it. Like Wi-Fi signals can still go to it.
Yep.
And so like, I assume if you put it on airplane mode, turn Wi-Fi off, like if you take those specific steps, but again, I think all of these cases are going to be extremely detail specific.
Yep.
It's going to be very much the totality of the circumstances. And then of course a timeline here.
And I think that goes to my don't overcomplicate the simple. If you can make an argument that the accused knew that an investigation was ongoing and they tried to hamper that investigation in any significant way, like you can just charge 131 Bravo. And if you look at the max punishment charts, like there's no real difference in the punitive landscape here. It's not like you're getting significantly more, like it's the same. So it's not like it changes in any significant manner what your final ultimate end goal is.
Also, just getting to label it obstruction of justice, like your panel members are going to know what obstruction of justice is. Whereas whatever lengthy title 131 Echo is. It's clear, but it's not obstruction of justice, which has like a certain ring to it.
I think just lay people just understand that term a lot mm-hmm. more than whatever nuanced version of 131 you're otherwise charging.
Yeah. So Judge Maggs dissents here. And Judge Maggs essentially says that he disagrees with the majority in that he doesn't think it requires for the person who has a possessory interest to totally be unable to interact with their property, but essentially holds or argues that a seizure occurs when there is some meaningful interference with an individual's possessory interests in that property. And I think that this is really interesting. I'll be interested to see how that language, how the language in the majority opinion, how all of that interacts with any pending Fourth Amendment cases, any pending seizure cases, especially when it comes to data. Like, what does a seizure look like when we're seizing purely data?
Yep.
Like, I mean, does this affect, like, what's the argument about preservation requests? I won't go down that rabbit hole because I've gone down enough today. But so I think that this language is very specifically about, like, this case is very specifically about this, but I think it has much broader implications.
No, agreed. You can analogize this opinion, and you could probably, like, I my guess is in the future we'll be able to draw a direct line from this case to Fourth Amendment progression when it comes to, like, digital media.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk takeaways.
Okay.
So one of my takeaways is the importance of experts and understanding the technology. So, you know, having your experts, not only your CID agents, talk about investigative SOP, but also your digital forensic examiners talking about the, like, how data is available, what data is available, what data might only be available through the phone, whereas what data would be available or manipulatable. Is that a word?
I think so.
Okay. We'll go with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, via other means, so via remote means, right? And so I think there's, as we continue, I mean, every single case that we're going to deal with from here on out, I think, honestly, in both of our experiences, I can't think of a case that I either advised on or did or that didn't have some form of digital evidence. We are going to have to understand this more and more, and it's going to change, right? So obviously, we're dealing with AI. We're dealing with virtual reality. We're dealing with this massively new landscape. And so we have to be able to understand the tech and the way that we're going to do that, unless you already are an expert. And if so, amazing. You're going to have to use your experts here.
Yeah, because this is going to be a question of fact for the fact finder in these cases. Like, if you charge one of these cases, like, they're going to have to determine, like, was the law enforcement agency or whoever was attempting to seize the product still endeavoring to seize? And if you don't understand that and you can't communicate that in an effective way, mm-hmm. like, they're not going to be able to find for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I mean, even beyond that, you're absolutely right. But even beyond that, dealing with motions to suppress,
yep.
Dealing with motions to dismiss for 917 motions, right? And so understanding the tech is going to be important from soup to nuts.
Yeah.
So do you have any takeaways?
I just go back to don't overcomplicate the simple. Like, we wouldn't be talking about this case if they charged obstruction. And I'm conjecturing, but I think that's the same result. Had you charged obstruction, like, there probably would have been a conviction for this and for the negligent homicide, and same result ultimately.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that's all we have for this case.
I think so too.
All right. Well,
this is only 18 minutes as compared to 25 minutes on a 10-page opinion for the last episode.
I didn't have a script for either one of them. So, good news or bad news, you have to edit them. We did very much take advantage of the fact that you were not here to supervise Major Barrett and I on the previous recording. And so, yeah, who knows what we talked about, honestly.
I mean, enjoy your nighttime listening audience.
Listen. I think both Major Barrett and I have very pleasant podcast voices, and so maybe it does help some people sleep. But hopefully they learn something about post-trial processing and statutory construction. Anyway, thank you all so much for joining us. It really means a lot to us that this is helpful for you. If you have any feedback for us, please let us know. But until then, we will talk to you next time on Calf Chat.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today for another episode of the Criminal Law Department Presents podcast. If anything you heard sparked a thought, we'd love to connect with you. Your comments help us create better future content for the field or the fleet. Reach out to us on Facebook or Instagram. The information can be found in the show notes for today's episode. The views expressed in today's podcast are those of the presenters and not necessarily the Judge Advocate General's or the Department of the Army or the Department of Defense.
Thanks, counsel, for both sides. The court will stand in recess until further order of the court.